I would just say there's one misperception of our veterans, and that is they are somehow damaged goods. Although if we tell our veterans enough that this is what's wrong with them, they may actually start believing it.
Welcome to Dead Reckoning Radio. We got Mike Steadman with us this time. Mike is a Naval Academy graduate, three-time national champion with the Naval Boxing Team, and he opened Ironbound Boxing Academy about a year ago. Let's listen to his gift of gab about how his transition went about.
Hey, Mike. How's it going, man?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing today?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good. This is pretty cool. I never heard of Anchor.
Yep. So we'll start out. You can just kind of tell everybody about like where you come from, your military background and your transition out, and then we'll get into what you did after.
All right, man. Sounds good. Awesome. So what's going on, everybody? My name is Mike Steadman. I am a former infantry officer in the Marines, Naval Academy class of 2010. I am originally from College Station, Texas. I graduated Bryan College Station, actually. I graduated high school there in 2005, and was really pursuing a career in the military, more so interested in the officer route. For the longest time, I was actually interested in Texas A&M University. But somebody introduced me to this idea of going to the Naval Academy. And once I started looking at that, I was like, hey, I think that's a good fit for me, for what I want to do. And it would get me out of, Bryan College Station, because Texas A&M is literally our backyard. Applied, had a long process of, driving around, talking to midshipmen, going to the admissions events and really just trying to do everything it took to get into the Naval Academy. And, after a long road, I ended up getting an appointment to the prep school for a year, where I went to prep school in Newport, Rhode Island, and ended up going, doing what I needed to do there, ended up getting accepted to the Academy. So spent four years at the Naval Academy, got introduced to the boxing program there, absolutely fell in love with boxing as a sport. End up doing really well with it, winning three national champs as a Navy boxer at 175 pounds. Loved it, was all about the Navy boxing program, end up graduating, get a commission in the Marine Corps, and pursued infantry, where I deployed to Afghanistan in 2012 and Japan and the Philippines in 2014. And really, really, again, boxing was always there. It never went away. And I just knew that as I start to think about next steps, I want to really pursue as best I could, giving back to people, and particularly young, Black and Latino males, the experiences I had with boxing and how it really changed my life and helped me get through the Naval Academy and become an officer. And I want to share what boxing did for me with other people, and decided instead of going the traditional route, pursuing an MBA or going straight into grad school, I decided to relocate to Newark, New Jersey, and try to get a boxing program going. So, I ended up taking a job at a private school here in Newark where I interned in college at the Naval Academy. And, it's crazy, but just through a series of events, it really just evolved. I came to this private school, St. Benedict's Prep, with the intent of really building out a program very similar to the Naval Academy. And then once I got on ground here, I realized I wanted to impact not just the St. Benedict's community, but the broader Newark community as a whole. Ended up getting a gym out in town, and fast forward, and Ironbound Boxing Academy was born. So
that's crazy, man. You can it's funny. I just want to say real quick, you can tell that you've been, talking to investors and stuff like that over some of our other guests who haven't been doing those things because of your gift of the elevator speech.
Yeah,
that was super polished for a fairly impromptu.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's crazy because it's just, we're talking literally about, like a 10-year span, right? Really more than that. It's probably about 13 years. And really just trying to condense it and just give you guys, the inside of where I'm at now. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, well, I mean, if you're talking to people who are going to, fund your projects, then I'm sure they're going to jump right on.
But, yeah, no, absolutely.
So why Newark?
It's funny you ask that, but, me and my friends have this saying. We feel like, sometimes fate is just, fate just brings us certain places. And one thing I've really grown over the last year is really trusting myself. But when I was getting out, and one reason I actually came to Newark, because, here I am, African-American male, Marine officer, went to the Naval Academy. I just didn't feel like a lot of people would be moving to Newark. I felt like it was off the grid. I didn't really think it was like a place people thought about. And when you think of boxing, urban, gritty, inner city, you know, I just don't think a lot of people were moving to Newark. I just didn't think a lot of people were moving to Newark. And so in my mind, I felt like Newark was wide open. I knew I had an in here with the private school. I never really experienced like northern inner city until I started interning at this private school and really fell in love with the concept of, you know, coming to Newark and open a gym. It was really to be closer to New York City, because in my mind, I feel like New York City is like the mecca of boxing, right? Like, you know, Brooklyn and all these different places. And I don't really have an in New York City, but I knew I had an in Newark. And I just felt like, because of my background and my skill set, you know, call it just faith, I felt confident that I could come here and get something going. And then, you know, fast forward, I was literally coaching here within the first, you know, month I got here. And then within 2 years, I ended up getting a space for a gym. And, you know, literally over the last year, I've just gotten a lot of PR regarding the gym. And, you know, I guess the bet paid off.
So did you move there with the intent of doing what you're doing with Ironbound? Not really know what it was going to be?
No, so I knew I wanted to coach boxing. And at first, to be honest, I thought I was going to come here and have a program very similar to, you know, the Naval Academy, just really school specific. So my concept at first was just, you know, coming to Newark, coach boxing at this private school, and really recreate the Naval Academy boxing program here at this private school. But once I got on the ground and I started to get out in the community, I realized that I didn't want to just impact one school. I wanted to impact multiple schools. And it just, the evolution of it was really that, you know, when you're talking about creating a team and creating a program and creating an atmosphere where everybody belongs, you can't have all these different tribes in it, right? So you can't have, like, the school I work at is St. Benedict's Prep. But, you know, if there's a West Side high school kid or an East Side high school kid or an Arts high school kid, you know, they really all need to come together under one brand and one identity. And when I got the space for the gym, I knew at the time I didn't have a nonprofit set up. And I knew there was an individual here in the city that was really trying to get something going with this concept of Ironbound USA. And my gym was literally in the Ironbound neighborhood of Newark. And I reached out to him because he was really big with graffiti. So he was doing a lot of art stuff. So, you know, graffiti artists, he would pull them in. And so I reached out to him and said, hey, man, you know, I really want to have some graffiti in the gym. What are your thoughts on it? And then we met and we're just like, hey, we're just going to brand this the Ironbound Boxing Academy. So it's all very organic. There's nothing, you know, crazy sexy about it, but it just, everything just made sense.
Cool. So is Ironbound set up as a, like a 501c3 now? Or
it is. Ironbound USA is a 501c3, and what we really focus on is we want to help inner city teens get jobs, right? So one thing we realized is that, unfortunately, a lot of the kids in the urban environment, they just lack the professional and social skills it takes to get a 21st century job. So our concept was that we create these programs that allow us to go into inner city and, you know, develop relationships with kids in the inner city and really help them tighten up their social skills, whether it's like shaking somebody's hand, learning how to market yourself accordingly, whether it's like, you know, having a resume or just feeling confident when you apply for school or apply for a job. And unfortunately, you know, high schools and the environment here is really not just preparing them for that. And so the concept of the Boxing Academy was it was going to be a way for us to really just build a relationship with the kids in the city.
So it's more than just a boxing academy. It's almost more of a life academy with boxing as the
absolutely as the frame. So, every time I create a post, every time I talk about the boxing program, it's really about more than boxing, right? And we really believe that. And the concept is not to create professional boxers. It's just how we enjoy spending our time. So, like, in the military, what do we like to do? We like working out. We like hanging out. Well, you know, out here, we like boxing. So that's really what kind of led us down that path. And that's what I've been working on.
It's brilliant. So what were the steps that you had to take to get that started? I know, like, there was a lot of work that went into it because I was following you guys from the beginning. But, you know, can you kind of summarize, like, what went into actually founding the gym and getting the space and all that?
Yeah, I think, well, the first thing is obviously, like, credibility, right? So, you know, I moved to Newark and I immediately start jumping in, training kids at gyms around town. And I would actually pay for their membership. So I was training like two or three kids and I would go to a for-profit gym here in town and I would pay for their memberships. But just the nature of teenagers and sports, you know, they don't really stick with it. So I was like, you know what? This really isn't the best business model. And so my job at the private school was I run a residence hall of 70 teenage boys. So I live in a giant residence hall with 70 teenage boys right in the heart of Newark. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start training the boys here. So we would push the chairs and tables out the way, and I just started hosting practice here. And then, lo and behold, the city of Newark decided to create a boxing program, and they had a free city gym. And I started taking my boys over to that gym. At first, I start, you know, carrying them back and forth in my car. And then I end up creating a relationship with the manager of recreation in the city of Newark, a guy named Obalijah Baraka, and talked to him about, hey, I got a lot of kids I want to bring to the gym. Could we schedule some kind of transportation arrangement? And, you know, the bus would come pick us up at school. We would go to, it was a van actually, and we would go to the gym literally every day. And the more I did it, you know, my obligations with the job, I wish we had something closer. And, you know, I was doing that for my first year, really just grinding out and training kids at the local rec center. And I reached out to Obalijah and asked him if there was a place closer that we could outfit as another gym, you know, just really to accommodate the kids in St. Benedict's and just to give me a little flexibility to do something different. Okay. And I was at a boxing show, and I told somebody that, you know, yeah, one of the limited aspects of my program was I didn't have transportation. And somebody was like, you just need to talk to Obalijah. And I was like, who is that? And they did an intro to me right there on the spot, and I talked
to him.
Yeah, like, and he coordinated. He's like, you know, I deal with kids. So he's like, if you got kids, we'll come pick you up. So, you know, we coordinated something, and he had the recreation van come pick us up. So
cool.
That's what I did for probably about the first year and a half. But I reached out to him one day. It was I'm not making this stuff up. It was very, very organic. I literally sent him a text message, and I said, hey, is there a space a little bit closer that we can outfit for a gym? If so, I'll outfit it myself, and the city won't have to pay anything. And what are your thoughts on that? And because he knew I was serious, and he just kind of saw the work I was doing with the boys I was already training, you know, it was like I sent him a text on a Thursday. I want to say by Monday, we were looking at some of the different spaces around town, and by Thursday, we had slapped a table on a location.
Damn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, using local leaderships and, like, forging those partnerships, like, that was pretty crucial for what you have now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing people got to realize is when you're dealing with a sport like boxing and the kind of kids I want to work with, the reality of it is, you know, a lot of times when you're trying to start these fitness gyms or whatever, a lot of people end up catering towards, you know, the boutique fitness boxing and all that kind of stuff just to pay the bills. And then they can coach the kids. But the priority is on training those for-profit clients. And I knew for what I wanted to do, I really wanted to do boxing as a sweet science, as a competition. And I wasn't really as interested in training those, you know, soccer moms or whatever that just want to come in and lose weight and be happy. So it was important for me to find a way to get a space where I wouldn't have to worry about crazy overhead, and all the money I did have, I could actually focus on the kids.
Awesome. In terms of like when you actually secured that space, because you have a space under the stadium.
Yeah, it's under the stadium it's under an abandoned stadium in the back of a recreation center here in the city of Newark.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Like, you know, we'll put the link to your website and your social media and stuff in the podcast notes. But it's pretty incredible. Like looking at, you know, the pictures of it before, it looks like something out of like an urban exploration blog. Like, you know, people going to like Chernobyl or something.
Yeah. No, it's and that was calculated too, because you know we wanted something that was very authentic and true. Mm-hmm. And the thing about Newark is when you think of Newark and urban and gritty, graffiti just really speaks to the city, right? So, you know, we want to create something to where it's like a destination. Like, you have to come here to experience what this gym feels like.
Oh, for sure. So then what about funding? Like, you know, how are you guys jumping into, you know, getting funds for what you're doing?
Initially, it was all very organic. I got a space for a gym. I just posted this random post on my Facebook, and lo and behold, you know, friends from, you know, my time in the military start immediately hitting me up. So, you know, there's a company, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Softfleet.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I came to know about you.
Yeah, those are my boys, because I used to train at their gym, CrossFit Civil War, back in the day in North Carolina. And we just got really close. And, you know, I would always talk to those guys about my future endeavors and what I want to do around boxing. And, you know, literally, I've watched the brand for Softly just literally grow.
Oh, like, that's incredible.
I remember when it was a PDF, right? Literally was just a PDF. But two PDFs. Juggernaut. It was like Juggernaut and
Selection,
Stamina,
I think.
Yeah, something like that. It was crazy. But I posted on my Facebook, and their COO, a guy named Aaron Woolman, and Brent Phillips immediately reached out to me. They're like, hey, man, congrats on the gym. Let's think about how we can help you. Maybe want to come out and film some stuff. But here's a little grant to get you started. They sent me some funds, and, you know, it was just off to the races. And then there was also a New York City police officer, a guy named Pat Russo, who runs a program in the city called Cops and Kids. And it really stepped in after the POW programs went away. And he manages 3 nonprofit boxing gyms in the city under the Cops and Kids Teddy Atlas Foundation. And it was a weird time because I think, like, we started working on the gym in 2016. And so it was really at the height of all the, I want to say another young man was killed by police in North Carolina and, you know, all the riots and stuff that go with that. And I guess Pat was just coming out of a meet and dealing with that. And then when I called him and told him I got a gym, he was just like, man, that's just such great news. I'm so happy for you. You know, let's set up a time to meet. And he invited me to come, you know, meet him in Brooklyn and see his various different gyms. And he actually brought me home that day and told me, he's like, hey, Mike, I'm donating $10,000 to your program. So, you know, you can count on the New York City Police Department to help you out. And so, you know.
That's wild, man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think it speaks to your character for sure. Like, the amount of connections that you had immediately, you know, before and, you know, right after you started this whole thing up.
Yeah. And, you know, my business partner, Gary Bloor, who helped me start the gym, you know, he had some connections as well, you know, a company called Metropolitan Walters that does really, really high end steel. And they donated our heavy bag frame. So me and Gary designed it on like a sketch. We're like, hey, this is how we need a heavy bags to look. And this is what we envision. And Metropolitan Walters came through. They had their welders make the platform. They delivered it to us. They installed it. So it was really like a collective effort. And people just kind of came and helped us get this thing off the ground. And it was really the thing people have to understand about me is I'm about getting it done. There's really no ego involved. And I remember when I walked into that gym and I got the thumbs up and it was just kind of like that now what moment. You know, it's like put up or shut up. And so that's when I had to start reaching out to other people to be like, hey, I really want to do this gym. You know, I can't do it by myself. And, you know, put it out to the universe that just I want to make this thing happen and I need support. And people just came through and, you know, helped us get it going.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. With that, then you started working with Bunker Labs, too.
This is where the fundraising stuff comes in. So now I got this boxing program, and it's up and running, right? We have responsibilities. We have responsibilities for the kids because now they rely on us. But, you know, this stuff just doesn't fund itself. And to be honest, as I start looking around at, you know, understanding how to raise money, I just wasn't impressed with what I saw coming out of a lot of the civic organizations and the nonprofit organizations. And I was more drawn to just entrepreneurship in general. So I took the approach of like, okay, we need to fundraise for this nonprofit. We need to fundraise for this gym. And I started gravitating more towards, you know, entrepreneurship. So fast forward, I ended up getting into a program at Stanford called Stanford Ignite. Spent the summer at Stanford last summer learning how to pitch the venture, learning how to, you know, really be under the wire and pitch Ironbound as a, you know, a full venture in front of venture capitalists, learning marketing, learning value proposition, all these crazy entrepreneurship terms we can talk about later. And, you know, one of the ladies in my cohort was really big in the Bunker Labs. And so, you know, at the last day of the cohort, last day of the program, we went to this Bunker Brews, which Bunker Labs is heavily known for. And that was my first introduction to it. And when I got back and I left Stanford, I was like, man, this would be something, you know, I wish I could connect to back on the East Coast. So she did an email intro, introduced me to Bunker Labs New York City. The email ended up getting buried for like 3 months. And then Bunker Labs, yeah, the guy who was running it, Chad Arroyo in New York City, he reached out to me, apologized for the email getting buried and said, hey, how about you come to our muster? And can you pitch your venture at our muster as one of our guest speakers? And I was like, damn, you know, sure. And I had been doing it pretty much the whole semester. And then having that background of doing it at Stanford, I felt pretty confident. So I go to this muster. I end up pitching the venture in front of, you know, Bunker Labs New York City. And it was a time where the whole Bunker Labs HQ staff was there. And the WeWork HQ staff was there for social impact. And the day I pitched that, you know, Ironbound was the day they released this veteran in residence program where they were giving veteran entrepreneurs free workspace at WeWorks all across the country. And wow. They pulled me aside and were like, hey, we think we have this program that you'll be great for. And we really want to see you succeed. So we don't want to limit you to the 6 months that the program typically gives. If we put you in charge of the program, then you'll get access to the workspace, you know, throughout. And if that's something you're interested in, let's talk about it. And so fast forward, I end up getting a leadership position within Bunker Labs, overseeing this veteran residence program. And then it's just been Bunker Labs, Ironbound, you know, grad school, and, you know, work for the last 6 months.
So how does the space help you?
So I'll tell you, it's
like, are there resources on site that are helpful? Like, you know, I mean, what's that doing for Ironbound?
Yeah. So first, has anybody ever actually been to a WeWork? Have you guys been to a WeWork?
No. No, absolutely
not. All right. Imagine Panera Bread and Starbucks on crack with fruit infused water and free Wi-Fi. You know what I mean? And so what it did for me was, one, it connected me with these other veteran entrepreneurs pursuing their own endeavors. And it also gave me time to kind of zoom out of just the gym, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, even though I run a venture and it's a nonprofit boxing gym, you know, early on, me and another partner I have, a guy named Keith Cologne, we were literally tag teaming, open the gym. I would get there at 4 o'clock, open the gym. Keith would come at 6. I would leave and go back to work. And then we probably pretty much just did that for 6 months. And so what Bunker Labs did was it allowed me to zoom out and think big picture, think strategically about the process. And so I started to gradually get pulled away from the gym. But at the same time, I was having other coaches come in and, you know, really start to volunteer their time. So I wasn't as needed. I wasn't needed as much at the gym, but it gave me the ability to actually focus on growing the venture.
Yeah, that's awesome. So wait, where does the Panera come in?
Panera Bread, just in terms of it's just nice, right? Like, you know,
the snacks.
Yeah, you know, free, you know, you get, first of all, the WeWork membership and the network is absolutely phenomenal. WeWork is a cool brand. You know, it's just putting a different spin on work. Whereas, like, for our parents' generation, work kind of pretty much defined you, right? It was like, that's who you were. If you ask what they do, they're like, I'm a, you know, mailman, or I'm this. Like, that was who they were. But you see, WeWork is just a place where you kind of hang out. You do your work, but it doesn't necessarily define you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. See, and I think that's the cool thing about, you know, the experiences that you've had, because you have so many good ideas. And it's like, you know, I don't put everything on fate. Like, you know, it's obviously a lot of hard work on you. But, like, obviously, if you weren't in certain places at certain times, like, some of this stuff might not have come to fruition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's just a cool, supportive network. You know, yeah. I've gotten in there, and, you know, one of the guys in the cohort who I brought in, this guy was actually working for Vet Easy. So he didn't have his own venture, but I knew he had a background in coding and programming. So I brought him in the cohort, just kind of like help balance out the cohort with that back end technology piece. And he actually ended up serving as a lot of people's like CTO, right? So really helping them think through the technology piece. He helped me build out a new website for the Boxing Academy. Super, super supportive. And when you're just in this environment and you're talking about entrepreneurship and you have that connection as being a veteran, it's just a different spin on like the veteran space. Because to be honest, before I did Bunker Labs, I was not involved in any veteran stuff at all. I promoted I was really proud of Ironbound as like a nonprofit, but I made it clear that it was not a veteran nonprofit. It's really focused on impacting the community.
To be honest, that's what's always attracted me to your project, is that and this is rare too, right? To have a guy get out of the military and start a project that's impacting the community in a positive way, but has absolutely nothing to do with the military.
Yeah. No,
you know, and there's guys doing great work for veterans and stuff. But it's just, it's very rare that there's a motivation among our generation of veterans to go out and make a positive impact on their community in the way that you're doing.
And, you know, being an infantry officer, especially being a black infantry officer, there's not that many of us, to be honest. And even though I was, you know, here I am, a black Naval Academy grad, three-time national champ, but I never felt like when I was in the military, I was really in a position to positively impact my community. Because the reality of it is, you know, if a tree falls in the wood and nobody sees it, doesn't make a sound, right? And that's kind of that's how I pretty much felt, you know, as a Marine officer. And so when I was getting out and being able to come to Newark and, you know, really start with this nonprofit, was this was my opportunity to like really make a sound and to be more visible. So,
I mean, moving to Newark from, I mean, Texas, like, do you still consider yourself a Texan, or like, do you feel like you kind of assimilated to New England, like when you were in Rhode Island? Like, how did that work? Like, did you still feel like kind of an outsider for a while, or?
I mean, I still feel a little bit like an outsider because Newark is just Newarkers have just been through so much. They really don't take kindly to like outsiders just in general. And it's something I still deal with today. And they have this saying that like, unless you're born and raised in Newark, you can't be from Newark. So you just got to throw that out the table. But you're right, because a lot of us military guys, you know, we leave home when we're in high school, right? Yeah. I left home when I was 18. I haven't lived in Texas since I was 18. So I think Texas is always in my heart, but I am more, I don't want to say like a free spirit, but you know, I don't know. My roots are in Texas, but I'm a lot more flexible, I guess. And, you know, I have this really giant back piece tattoo of a Ronin samurai. And I just kind of embrace that ideology of just, you know, a man without a master. So, you know, just kind of go where you want to go and whatever makes sense.
So you did. Did you ever consider going back to Texas, or was it, you know, when you were starting to think about getting out, what was the thought process there?
For a little bit, I considered potentially going back to Texas A&M for graduate school.
Yeah. Only
because I grew up there. It was in my backyard. And I just, it would feel like coming home, because I grew up around Aggie culture.
Yeah.
You know, I bought, you know, tickets from scalpers back in the day, watching the game at the last minute. So, like, that's the environment I grew up in. I worked out at Texas A&M campus. Like, Texas A&M represented home. But, you know, when I was transitioning out, I hadn't been in Texas in, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
Right? So I didn't really feel like, you know, and even people in my high school, when I told them I was going to the Naval Academy, they didn't care. They were like, you're going to the Navy. I was like, no, I'm going to the Naval Academy. They're like, oh, well, you know, Jamal's in the Navy. Have you seen him? I'm like, listen, man, like, I don't tell you. So, you know, in my environment, and it's a reality, too, you know, unfortunately, you know, for a lot of young men, blacks and Latinos coming from certain environments, people, we don't get the same, there's no wow factor, right? So, like, even here in Newark, even though I went to the Naval Academy, even though I was a Marine officer, it literally does not mean shit to the environment I operate in, right?
Well,
so, like, it's all about credibility. It's all about delivering. Nobody cares. You went to the Naval Academy. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything here. Right. And so you really have to kind of just, it's just a different mentality. And so, you know, when I'm looking at recruiting young men to go to these different places, that's the reality that they face. Right. So their family, their friends, they really don't understand it. But if I can kind of help shed light on what those mean, what that means for them and their family and their future in general, then I can make a real difference. But like, you know, they don't care about that stuff here. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm just like everybody else. I'm just another black guy out here in Newark, you know, trying to make a difference.
Which, I mean, it isn't the worst thing.
Yeah, it's not. It's really not.
You know what I mean? You're like, and you're working your ass off and you're doing different things. Really, like, when you think about it, I mean, we can talk in a minute about like how you apply, you know, your military background and stuff. But I mean, your military background has very little to do with what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, no. It's your credentials really aren't going to help you that much, but. That leads me to my next point. How do you apply what you learned in the Marine Corps to what you're doing now and, you know, your transition out and stuff?
So I think, so the Marine Corps is very, listen, I'm telling you guys, and you know this, like being a Marine officer, especially being a Marine infantry officer, is an extremely hard job because they hold you accountable. Like like you will never be held to the level of accountability in the civilian world like you are in the Marine Corps. And so when you walk away from that experience, it just puts you in a different understanding of leadership, right? And, you know, people used to always tell you when you get out, they're like, oh, the civilian world's hungry for leadership. And I used to be like, yeah, bullshit. You know, I felt like they were just, you know, telling us what, you know, preaching to the choir, right? But then you get out here and you actually realize people aren't really that good of leaders. Like, there's no real extreme ownership out here. You know, people, like, if my Marines fail, like, if I send a prime example, if I'm in the Marine Corps and, you know, one of my fucking Marines misses his dental appointment or whatever, fucking company commander is going to call me in his office and he's going to chew me out for this Marine missing his dental appointment, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's frustrating and it's tedious, but, like, that's the Marine Corps. And you get out in the civilian world and people make mistakes, but nobody really looks at you as the reason that they failed, you know? They're more focused on that individual, but they still kind of hold you accountable, but not to the extent of like you were in the Marine Corps. And so, you know, learning that, and, you know, it's funny, I just took three kids to the Virginia Military Institute over the weekend for for a summer program. I drove down there, it's about 6 hours, and I dropped them off. And this Marine Corps Sergeant Major was doing an introduction speech, and he talked about message to Garcia. And I have not heard that term since the Naval Academy, but honestly, I feel like I've imbued it, and I think all military people have the capacity to imbue it as well, of just this idea of just getting shit done, right? Like, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, figure it out, you know?
Is that what that means? Message to go see it? Because I'm going to be honest, I've never heard that before in my life.
Yeah, you should look it up. It's real simple, this story about... you know, Garcia was a rebel during the Spanish-American War. They needed to get a message to him. They called this guy. They told him, hey, if you need to get a hold of Garcia, who was in the mountains of, like, Cuba, hey, get Rowan. He'll go in. He'll get the message. So they called Rowan. They gave him the message. He didn't say anything. Walked into the island for about 3 weeks. 3 weeks later, he comes out on the other side, you know. Didn't really tell him the experience. Didn't tell him what it took. He just delivered the message. So at the Naval Academy and the military academies, they really, really stress that concept of, like, figure it out, you know? Hey, I don't know where my class is. Figure it out. Message to Garcia. So that's the concept.
So how did they like the what did your kids think of that program?
Man, it's phenomenal. There's tons of these little programs out there.
I see you taking them to a bunch, so it's cool that, like, you know, they get those opportunities too. Like, I see you doing a lot outside the gym with them.
Yes, the military academies, just, you know, they have just such any military in general, right? You know, back before, you know, the homeless veterans and all the craziness and people ruining the brand of veteran, there's a lot of places that still. I think there are a lot of places that still really imbue, you know, what it means to serve and what it means to live up to higher standards.
Yeah.
And, you know, so for me, when the demographic I'm dealing with, winning is not just the Naval Academy, right? Winning is if I can get a kid into West Point, Coast Guard Academy, Citadel, VMI, like Texas A&M, I don't care. I know what these brands represent, and I know the caliber of people that tend to go down that path. So last year I sent two kids down to VMI. One actually ended up getting in, and another one really just changed his life. And he actually went back this year for a second time. So I decided to, you know, drive down this year with the boys and just – I already knew they were good. Like, I had no worries about it. But driving down just reconfirmed what I already knew. So it's a fantastic leadership program down there over the summer. It's called the College Orientation Workshop. The concept is to really ease that transition for young Black and Latino males – into college, and they just have a phenomenal staff down there. I'm super impressed, and it's really quite amazing some of these programs that are out there and what they're doing. People just don't, you know, really know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
Man, honestly, the way that that I've been listening to you, like, usually with guests, like, I'm able to guide, but, like, you have a captivating way of speaking, and I'm just, like, listening to what you're saying, and, like, instead of you know, like, I'm actively listening to you instead of, like, thinking about what I'm going to say next.
Yeah, no, it's a, you know, my friends told me I have the gift of gab. So
you sure do.
Definitely. I'm like nodding and making, like, faces. You're sitting in front of me.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think I told you that before the podcast. I told you what my friends allegedly say I have. So,
yeah, it's,
know,
good.
I'm,
man.
Just. Yeah.
Honestly, I think it's gonna. This is gonna take you. You know, your gift of gab is gonna take you further in this endeavor than a lot of people would, just because, you know, being able to talk to people, like, I mean, and that's part of what you're teaching these kids, right?
Like,
yeah,
the confidence to talk to people, you know, that's the kind of stuff I see with my son that, you know, when you teach a kid to go up to a register and give somebody cash and get the change back and, you know, what to do with it, like things like that. Like, we just got a house phone, you know, so that, like, we don't need it. We have cell phones, but, like, we got a house phone so that he would learn, like, phone manners and how to answer a phone and, you know, what to say and things like that. Like, all, I feel like all these things, and, you know, I'm sure you see it to a much greater degree with the kids that you're working with, but, like, all these things are kind of getting lost in society.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, just, again, I have to give tons of credit to just the Marine Corps, just putting me under the wire. You know, they're briefing orders to Marines in Afghanistan, you know, sitting out there looking them in the eye and having to convey a plan and have them believe in the plan and just doing it over and over and over again. It just got me a lot more confident, I think, speaking in front of people. And then when it comes to, like, social issues, you know, whether it's in Newark and boxing, I try to be as authentic as possible. I don't try to sugarcoat anything. I don't try to pretend I'm something that I'm not, even on my social media, even though that's what a lot of people tend to do these days. And so it makes it a lot easier for me when I communicate about some of the stuff that we face here in the urban environment, because I'm just very authentic. That's really what it comes down to. I'm not trying to sell you on something I don't know anything about. I'm only can convey you what my experiences are. And I like to think that my background, you know, there's a track record that, like, I'm not just making this shit up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So did you do any coaching when you were still in the Navy?
A little bit. So because of the success I had early on, you know, I won my first national championship my sophomore year at college. So now I was coming back and I literally had, you know, two more years of college left, and I was already, you know, a national champ at 175 pounds. And so I kind of got thrown, I don't say, I kind of got looked at as a leader within the boxing program early on. And so a lot of, you know, the younger guys coming up and the older guys trying to get that national championship, they kind of start to, you know, ask me for advice on certain things. So I always cared about the program in general, because it's crazy, right? It's like, after you win that first national championship, it's like, whew, that's done. Now what? You know, now it's about bringing your teammates up. And so I really start, you know, really focusing on developing the team as a whole and work with other guys. And so that's when I start to get, you know, stepping up and start to fulfill a more coaching role.
Yeah.
And I used to always tell my boxing coach, I was like, oh, I'm gonna coach boxing one day. I'm gonna coach boxing one day. And then, you know, you start saying it, and then it's just like, wow, I'm really gonna coach boxing one day. And it's like, yo, now I coach boxing, you know?
That's wild, man.
I'm curious, did you box before you went to the academy, or did you pick it up at the academy?
Never in life. I literally picked it up at the academy. You know, I had so it's funny, because I actually wanted to do crew, right? So I came back from, you know, high school, where I played high school basketball, never got in the game. Like, I wasn't getting the game with more than, like, 2 minutes left on the clock, and we had to be up by at least, like, 30 points. So, but I like that team atmosphere, man, and I love being on a team. So when I got to college, I was like, oh, you know, the crew team takes walk-ons. And you got to remember, this was like 06 before CrossFit really blew up. So right. I go out for the crew team, and they have us in this room rowing these ergs, and I was like, this is stupid. Like, I want to go out on a, you know, I want to go out on the water. I want to row a boat. I don't want to sit here and, you know, row this erg till I puke. So I was like, I need to do something else. Walked in the boxing gym. The coach made us spar that day, and I was like, I don't know what that was, but I want to learn how to do it. And, you know, my first experience, my first fight, I actually lost in probably about 45 seconds. The coach ended up throwing in the towel. And just got really down on myself about that, and just was committed to learning the craft. And, you know, lo and behold, I end up just being really, really successful at it. It just made sense to me. You know, some people are good at math. Mm-hmm. I was just good at boxing. I don't know what to tell you. I could get in the ring, and I knew what I had to do to win.
Good. Wow, that's awesome, man. I mean, you know, because some people come from a coaching background, and they weren't great at whatever the sport is. You know, they can just articulate it well, but, you know, it seems like you definitely have it down in terms of, you know, both skill sets.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love boxing. And, you know, for the longest time, when you talk about, like, civic issues and social issues, you know, you have a lot of people that love to get out there and, like, I don't want to say preach, but love to just be vocal and be like the next Martin Luther King and do all that kind of stuff. And so even though I'm really passionate about, you know, my community and some of the social issues that we're facing in my community, I feel in my heart the best way I can address those issues is through boxing. So as long as I stay in that medium, I'll be successful. So I decided, like, that's how I, you know, address the world and, you know, battle back or, you know, bring issues to light is through boxing, because it gives me a, it's authentic and it just really gives me a good platform.
Yeah. No, I think when you're talking about, you know, the, all the things that go along with, you know, boxing and what you do with these kids, I think you're absolutely right. That's the most impactful way that you're going to affect these kids.
It's and the thing people realize about boxing is, if you look at the history of it, the poorest, brokest, most desolate, you know, Americans have always gravitated towards boxing.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford to do these other sports. And the nice thing about boxing is it doesn't cost a lot, right? All you literally got to do is show up, train hard, you know, and something will happen, right? Because if you show up, you're going to get better. It's like anything else in life. If you show up at the gym and you train hard every day, you will get better. Something's going to give, right? Now, it might happen quicker for other people, but if you show up, that's going to happen. And so that's what I love about boxing, because it's just so true and authentic to the lower class and the urban environment. And like, if I were to come to Newark and say, like, hey, I'm about to do this lacrosse camp, people are probably going to look at me sideways. But I knew, I knew in my heart, I was like, yo, if I come to Newark and I talk about boxing program, they're going to get it, right? Like, you don't have to sell them on why boxing is important and what it offers. Like, they'll just get it. And sure enough, when people find out we have a boxing gym, they're like, boxing, I want to sign my sons up, or I want to sign my daughter up. So they get it. Urban environments get it.
Yeah. Well, so we'll talk about some veteran stuff before we get out of here. You know, you said you stay away from a lot of the veteran projects and things like that. What do you think, like, the veteran community in general, you know, both like the social entrepreneurship side and the capital side, like, what do you think the veteran community is doing right, like, versus what they're doing wrong?
When I look back, all the stuff that gravitated, like, one of the reasons I want to be a Marine, one of the reasons I want to be a Marine officer, because I felt like being a veteran was, like, cool, right? Like, it was just understood. Like, people didn't really talk about their service much. You know, you had that high school teacher, you know, in my case, a guy named Harold Wart. He was, like, a colonel in Vietnam. And it was known that he was, like, a Vietnam vet, but you didn't really know much more past that, right? Mm-hmm. But you just... he just kind of lived it, right? Like, he was hard on you, you know, demanded a lot, but there was no, like, he didn't wear a campaign cover or nothing crazy, right? It was just kind of, like, understood. And so it was almost like badass when someone was a veteran. And I kind of think we've gotten away from that, because the narrative that gets spun so much is that if you're a veteran, you're broken or something's wrong with you, or PTSD and, you know, all this other stuff just kind of gets thrown in the mix right away.
Yeah.
And so when people have that, it gives a bad spin on the term veteran. And then another thing, and you guys know this, we can be completely honest, a lot of people haven't seen combat, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying PTSD is, you know, not a serious issue, but we know for a fact that the majority of people out here claiming post-traumatic stress and all the stuff that the military did to them, like, they fundamentally have not been shot at. Like, they haven't taken life. So,
yep. Well,
that's the narrative that gets spun so much, and it takes away from all the other stuff that veterans do. So, like, if I go to an event and all I want to do is get motivated, you know, it's good to be around other vets, whatever. And then the speaker gets up there and talks about PTSD and veteran suicide. It's just like, you can't really bring your family to that event. You know what I mean?
Yep. No, I'm with you. I'd much rather bring my family to something you're doing than something like that.
Yeah. That's what I tell the guys at SoFleet all the time. You know, Fish, that's what I love about what they're doing with – sorry, I always say SoFleet, but it's SoFleet.
I know.
It's SoFleet. He corrects me.
Yeah, I know.
It's SoFleet.
That's all right.
I feel like they rebranded that, right? Like, it's cool, and even just wearing that apparel and wearing that gear,
yeah,
it's not like wearing a campaign cover. It's like a certain – it's a subtleness to it.
Yeah.
Right? And I like that.
I've always loved that about them. That they don't, yeah, they don't, you know, and you know, when they support guys like you, like, it's that they're
policy is very much like real, recognize real.
They don't play
any shit, and they don't go for the trends, and they go against the grain a lot.
Yeah,
they're so absolutely putting a better face on veterans and veteran-run organizations, companies, what have you, because they're not perpetuating this issue with ultimately a hot button highlighter that would get you views and whatnot.
Yeah, like we are, you know, a lot of people, whether they're combat vets or not, but like you're a veteran, we can go out and we can start badass businesses. Whether it's a, you know, there's a woman here named Tori Fisher. She's a female crew chief. She started Backwards Flag Brewery, which is a badass brand. The beer, she's my friend. I just literally had lunch with her the other day. It's badass, right? Softly, like, hey, we're making workouts. You know, I can rep Backwards Flag all day. I can rep Softly all day. You know, we can start badass boxing gyms and jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. Like, I like wearing that stuff. I don't want to walk around with, you know,
22 something or other.
Yeah, thank you for your service kind of stuff. Just not what I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's funny the way that people have kind of carried that and, you know, picked it up as their cross to bear, like with the, you know, I mean, for example, for like the 22 shit or PTSD. You know, that movie, Thank You for Your Service, came out, and when I watched it, I was like, wow, they actually hit on, TBI, right?
Yeah.
Which is new, and that's cool. Then I read a bunch of reviews, like, and the movie was okay. And then like I read a bunch of reviews and like nobody said shit about it. So I'm like, did it even have an impact on people? Like they're kind of not talking about PTSD. They're actually talking about a legitimate issue, you know, that affects more people and isn't actually getting a lot of press, and people just ignored it because it's not the hot button. Like it's not in people's ears yet.
No, absolutely. And
if I had to guess, the comments were a lot more along the lines of an immediate veteran response or a cliched veteran response of, well, that's not about PTSD, thus it's not important. Or what about it? Immediately discount.
And it's a buzzword. You know, when I was getting out, I think the word was also like suicidal ideation and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, I don't know, I like cool stuff. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I like cool stuff. Like, I like stuff that I can wear and walk around in, and, you know, it's like a subtle where somebody asks you a question, hey, what's that? And that's what I'm drawn to. So I'm drawn to badass veteran brands, but not necessarily the ones that like wave the veteran flag, like for everyone to see. You know, I don't like to wear aggressive ass t-shirts and clothing. I just like to kind of give a head nod to, you know, I like that silent head nod. That makes sense.
That old school veteran subtlety that you were talking about.
Yeah. You know, we're so, like, it's crazy, man, because we are so much more than what we're put out now. And the thing is, even in a place like New York City, what people have to realize is that everybody that claims to be a veteran or whatever, they're just not. And there's no way to verify it or check it, right? Because people know that if you claim you're a veteran, that it automatically gives you certain benefits. And so, unfortunately, like, it's just this hodgepodge of, like, homeless people claiming to be veterans, drug addicts claiming to be veterans. You know, soldiers and Marines and whatever else that weren't very good soldiers and Marines that got kicked out.
Right.
Now want to play the veteran card. And it's just like, what does that leave the rest of us?
Proud of their service.
Yeah. So what does that leave the rest of us?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and that's, you know what I think? I think as long as people are doing it like you are, then we've got some hope.
Yeah. And I think some places are getting it right. And that's why I was drawn to Bunker Labs, because I went to this program at Stanford and it was so... The Stanford program was so badass because we were focusing on entrepreneurship, right? They're like, all right, they said that the majority of people that come out of this program that start their businesses tend to be veterans, right? So they run these programs at Stanford all summer long. It's called Stanford Ignite. My program was a Stanford Ignite post 9/11 veterans, but they see more veterans actually going out and start businesses. And so to come out of that environment, I was like, okay, I'm focused on entrepreneurship. You know, I'm reading entrepreneurship books and looking at case methods and all that kind of stuff. And so you get connected with Bunker Labs, and it's just a different spin. It's rebranded that narrative. If you go to a Bunker Labs event, I guarantee you it's not like any other event you've probably gone to regarding, like, veterans and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think
it's such a cool opportunity that you got, and I'm glad that you're just running with it, because it's something that is definitely going to take your project further and really get it in the right hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I believe in the mission. I think regarding stuff like Bunker Labs, I think it's cool that we have our own incubators where we can kind of, you know, come together and feel safe and feel like we can bounce ideas off each other and, you know, really just get to know each other in a different light. And just super supportive community. It's great. And it's cool to just focus on, again, we focus on entrepreneurship. Like, we're not a VSO, right? Like, we're not going to be handing out socks or anything like that.
Yeah.
What we can do is help you think through your business model and your business plan and help you connect with resources that can help you grow it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm sure it's, you know, you are who you hang out with too, like who you associate with. So when you're around people that are making moves, then it's going to be easy for you to, you know, and there's that competitive side to you too, right? Like you're going to always want to be doing more and all that as opposed to, you know, everybody who starts a veteran owned t-shirt company every 5 seconds, you know, that it's not going to go very far.
Yeah, like they say, you are the average of the five people you surround yourself around.
Yep.
And, you know, I was joking with my girlfriend today because I told you guys before the podcast, I actually stepped down from my job today. So, like, the job that, like, pays my bills and gives me income and gives me health care to really focus on a corporate wellness component of Ironbound I'm about to add.
Yeah.
And really focus on doing the venture full time. And when I talk to my more traditional buddies, you know, the guys that got the MBAs and are chasing degrees, and I tell them, like, hey, I stepped down today. They're like, what the hell? Are you crazy? Like, what's your plan? What's going on? But you talk to the people in Bunker Labs and the entrepreneurs, they're like, congrats, man. You know? So it's like...
paradigm shift.
It's a completely different paradigm. Literally, like, half the group, which are, you know, the entrepreneurs, they're all congrats. You know, this is really going to help you move forward. But then on the other end of the spectrum, the non-entrepreneurs are more like, what are you doing? Well, I hope you have a plan, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's crazy.
Well, good. I'm excited for you, man. As soon as you told me that, I was like, wow, like he must be doing some deep breathing right now. But, you know, that's stressful, but like it's obviously going to give you a lot more time to focus on that. And I have no doubt that you're going to push it further.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Just through Bunker Labs, I've gotten connected with some great mentors. I've got some great PR lately, you know, for the brand. And I got a mentor who's a venture capitalist here, runs a venture capital firm called Luna Cap Ventures. And he really helped me sit down and come up with a business model to fund the nonprofit. So I'm actually growing it into more of a social enterprise with a for-profit piece and looking to use boxing as a corporate wellness program to train employees to help lose weight and, you know, book companies and organizations as our clients. So
awesome. So for now, like with Ironbound, how can people help, like, donations, you know, services, stuff like that?
So there's two things really people can do is, one, they can always go to our website, ironboundboxing.org, and just make a donation. It really helps us out because we don't charge kids anything, and it's important for us to be able to support kids in Newark that don't really have very much. So, you know, $10, $100, it really helps, and it all goes back to the kids. And then as we start moving with this for-profit component, any intros people have in the Northeast that would be interested in a corporate wellness boxing program, you know, to kind of, not everybody wants to do yoga or get massages. You know, maybe someone want to get out and have a, you know, get a good sweat going. If they can make intros for me, that'd be fantastic.
Cool. And then where can people find you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Iron Mike Stedman. So if you just type in Iron Mike and then Stedman, that's my Instagram. It's where I communicate with a lot of the kids that we train. And it's just a good way to just communicate with the world in general. And then obviously you can add me on Facebook and LinkedIn. If you just type in, if you hashtag Ironbound Boxing, 99.9% chance I'm going to pop up.
Cool, man. Is there anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I appreciate you guys bringing me on the podcast. You know, it was an eventful day, but I'm excited for the future and excited to, you know, continue to meet other great brands out there and help us support each other and getting some of these stories out, because again, just going back to what we talked about earlier about, you know, veterans and the narrative, like, we are changing the narrative, like, right now with stuff like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said before, I'm so optimistic for you, man. It's an awesome thing that you're doing, and I think it's just going to do so well.
I appreciate it, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, you take care, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
All right. Take care, Mike.
I think the biggest misperception is that somehow we're damning. Nothing really can stop us.